Last week we had our point of view discussion event, and it was the time in which we were able to come together and ask questions and kind of talk about our point of view about what's going on in the United Methodist Church right now, especially with General Conference, the special session coming up in February regarding issues of homosexuality and the church's stance on that. Will things change? Will they remain the same? And what will happen? There was a lot of, I'm not sure. And so we took that time. We took almost a whole day just to come together and sort of voice our opinions, our ideas, our point of view. And we had disagreements. There were some times of tension, but we all came out of it feeling as though we had been heard and that we had not been forced away because of whatever it is that we believed, however it was that we saw the world. And there was one point when it was during lunch, I think, and we were, getting everything finalized and making sure everybody had stuff. And, there were several tables, and it was about 8 or 10, chairs to a table. And so people were sitting and eating lunch, and I was off taking care of something. I finally got my tray, and I was walking into the room, and I was trying to, look around finding an open chair. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm back in high school. Or no, even worse, middle school. You know that experience when you're standing there with your tray and you're trying to find a seat and you're like, oh my gosh, everybody's looking at me. We never grow out of that experience, do we? I'm sorry for the kids in this room, but the reality is you never grow out of that experience. And I was standing there, it's like, please, somebody, where's a seat? We've had several people come up to us after the event and say, it was so great. We were able to speak what was on our minds. And we also have had a lot of people say, for whatever reason, I wish I could have been there. And for some, it was scheduling or whatever. But there have been some who said, I wish I could have gone, but I was afraid to. I was afraid to go to hear what everybody else would say. I was afraid to go to say what was really on my mind, on my heart. But I wish I would have gone. I wish I would have gone, but I was afraid. We know what it's like to, in that moment, think, oh, I don't need to go, or maybe I should, but I just don't want to, and maybe it's not that big of a deal anyway, and then it's over, and we hear about it, and we think to ourselves, why didn't I go? I wish I would have gone. Whether it was a church event, or a social event, or a job interview, or whatever, how many times have we said to ourselves, I wish I would have gone? But I was afraid. We all have our different reasons. We all have our regrets of why we have chosen or not chosen to do something, to be someplace, to be a certain kind of person. And those regrets are always wrapped around this idea of fear. Why are we so afraid? In today, it's no news to anyone. There are so many different ways to communicate. We are more globalized than we have ever been. Because of communication, we are in some ways much smaller a world than we ever thought that we were. And yet, in this world that's so easy to communicate, so many different ways, so many technologies, so much globalization, we are the loneliest we have ever been. By the way, I know the word loneliness is not a real word, but one of the things you get to do as a pastor and a theologian is you get to make up words. Because sometimes we don't have the word to describe what it is that we are experiencing, what it is that we are feeling. We are the loneliest we have ever been. There are over 100,000 people right here in Lakeland. And yet how many of us as Lakelanders have felt alone? How many of us have felt alone right here in this church? Right here in this worship service, surrounded by dozens and dozens of people, sometimes surrounded by hundreds of people, and yet we still feel alone, like we are not one of them. It happens even in church. And so we may feel as though, there's lots of opportunities. I read about them every week. There's lots of rooms that I could go in, lots of classes, lots of groups, lots of ministry, and yet I just don't feel like I'm worthy enough to go in there. And so we just kind of drift. We drift through church. We drift through our jobs. We drift through life. We see that everybody else seems to be doing okay. They seem to have a straight head on their shoulders. They seem to be involved in a whole lot of stuff. What about us? Why can we not have what everybody else does? In Adam Hamilton's book that we are basing this sermon series on, he writes of loneliness, of fear, of failure, of insignificance. He writes, "Often we feel lonely or we fear being alone. We tend to do the opposite of what is needed. Instead of reaching out to others or going out where others are, we withdraw in fear. We drop out. We stop trying to connect. It feels easier and less painful if we isolate ourselves. And it almost guarantees that our struggles will continue." And we know about these struggles. We see them most often through celebrities. We read about some actor, some singer, some famous person who we have maybe even revered, who has been so successful, maybe someone like Robin Williams or Anthony Bourdain or Kate Spade, and we see that their life is not as successful as it was always portrayed. That even for them, feelings of loneliness, of insignificance, of failure was too much. And then we also know it is not just celebrities. It's anyone. We all go through those times when maybe we even put on a great face, maybe where you're even successful at showing that maybe nothing's wrong, when inside we have these feelings of fear, of failure, of insignificance, of loneliness. We talked about at the beginning of this series that when we start out as kids, sometimes we are afraid of monsters. We're afraid of monsters under our bed. We're afraid of monsters in our closet. We're afraid of the monsters that we see on TV. And then as we grow and as we mature, we realize that those monsters may not be real. But there are other monsters that take their place. Monsters of loneliness, of insignificance, of failure. And then we realize these monsters are not under our bed. These are monsters which live inside our head. And they live inside our hearts. We are so afraid that we are failures. We are so afraid that anytime we begin something, anytime there is an opportunity presented before us, we are afraid that we will fail, that we will look like failures, that we will look insignificant, weak, incompetent. And so we don't even try because we are afraid that we will be seen as failures. And our culture has gotten a little bit better about saying, you know, don't be afraid to fail. But we still have a hard time accepting that that's true. You know, don't be afraid to try. Don't be afraid to fail. But that is a really hard mindset to change. The other thing is, if people are not afraid to fail, many times it's because they're not really trying anything. It can be easy not to be afraid of failure if we don't really take a risk, if we don't step out, if we don't try. But remember, failing does not mean that we are failures. Just because you fail does not mean you are a failure. You are not a failure. Failing does not make us insignificant. Failing should not isolate us in those times when we think that we are not successful. Failing does not mean that we have to do it all by ourselves. That if we have to have help, if we need assistance, if we need resources, that does not make us failures. It should also not mean that we are worthless just because we didn't succeed. It should not mean that when we fail, we need to think that we are less than we truly are, that we should not have more, that we should not be more, that we should not have better, that we should not be better. And this isn't prosperity. This is grace. Grace is when we are able to see that we are not alone, that we are not insignificant, that we are not failures. Some of you may know or remember John Acuff. He's a writer and blogger that developed the series Stuff Christians Like, which is kind of a takeoff of Stuff White People Like. And so in one of his writings many, many years ago, he was talking about this time he went to a kids' restaurant with his daughter, and they had this great setup of, like, you know, hot dog stuff and ice cream. So, like, on one side was all the hot dog stuff and the condiments, and on the other side was all the ice cream and all the condiments. And he wrote about seeing this kid walk up, and he was getting his ice cream. He had this huge bowl of, you know, just beautiful white vanilla ice cream. And he was talking with someone or playing, and he wasn't really paying attention. And so he pressed down this lever that he thought was hot chocolate or, you know, chocolate syrup. It was actually mustard. And he did not realize this until he had pulled the lever all the way down, and this glob of mustard just fell on top of this beautiful white ice cream. And so this kid, he was maybe 8, 9 years old. He just stands there for a second, just looking at this horror that he has created. And John writes that he looked as though the weight of the world had been placed on his shoulders, that he made such a huge, horribly profound mistake. And he just stood there in his failure. And actually, a waiter came over and he said, "You know, that's no problem. We'll get you a brand new bowl." And the kid said, "No, that's okay. I'll keep this one." And so he takes his little spoon and he starts mixing up the vanilla ice cream and the mustard. And what used to be this bright colored, I mean, even with the mushroom, the mustard, this bright white vanilla ice cream with the bright white, bright yellow mustard, he just starts mixing it together until it turns into this bowl of just gray mush. And he sits down at his table and he slowly begins to eat it. He begins to eat it in failure. But then the same waiter came up to him and he said, "Look, it's okay. You can have a new bowl. Here's a new bowl." We do not need to be afraid of accepting grace. We do not need to be afraid in those times when we have just made a huge mess of whatever it is that we have tried to do, whatever it is that we have tried to accomplish, and it just turns to crud and slush. That it is grace when someone comes up to us and says, "It's okay. You can have a new bowl." Sometimes we are at a loss for words, and we are not always at a loss for words because of pain or because of grief or because of fear. Sometimes we are at a loss of words because of that power of grace that just sometimes comes out of nowhere and reminds us that we are worthy, that we are not alone, that we are not failures. And when that is presented to us, we don't have the words to respond. I know for me, I've been serving here for almost a year and a half. And almost every Sunday, I've been trying to put into words what it was about our band, the 1120 band, that what was that thing that made it so special. I mean, it's not just talent. They have that. But for the longest time, I've been racking my brain trying to figure out, you know, what is it? What is that thing? What is that truth that makes this so incredible, so special, so unique? And it's probably been about a month ago that I finally figured it out. I was finally able to put something around it. I don't even remember what song they were singing. It was during the offertory, but I was sitting right there in the front, and all of a sudden I got it. And I got this vision of this person just walking down, you know, Walnut Street or Lake Morton, and it's just raining profusely. You know, the skies are dark and cloudy, and, you know, the thunder's booming, and, I mean, just a monsoon is going down, and this person, for whatever reason, is walking out in it. Maybe they lost their job. Maybe they had a fight with their spouse. Maybe they got evicted from their house. But for whatever reason, they're just walking in the rain, and they don't even really know where they're going until they come down this street, and they start hearing this music that they've never heard before. And for whatever reason, it starts to draw them in. And so they take a step closer, and they take another step closer, and another step closer. And all the while, the music seems to be drawing them in until, before they know it, they're actually inside the building. And they smell the coffee, and they hear the music even louder. Maybe even someone opens the door and invites them to come in. Even though they're dripping wet, they've got flip-flops on, you know, maybe a sleeveless T-shirt. They're just dripping with water, but they say, "It's okay, come on in." And they continue to hear this music playing, and they see the candles burning, and they see the pallets, and they see everybody also in flip-flops and shorts and jeans. And then before they even realize what has happened, they're sitting right here in the front. And it is like this giant blanket has just come out of nowhere and fallen upon their shoulders and wrapped them around in warmth and love and acceptance. And I thought, that's it. That's what this band does. It is like you personally are invited to come right in the midst of a fireplace, out of whatever rainstorm you have walked out of, and you are right at the center, and you are given this soft, warm, fuzzy blanket, and you hear the word welcome. We've been waiting for you. That's what this band is able to do. And it's not talent. I mean, they'll play whatever it is that you put in front of them. But I think even more importantly, that comes from experience. That comes from every musician acknowledging that they too have been through a valley of darkness, a time of challenge, a time of heartbreak, a time of fear, of insignificance, of failure. And even in the midst of that, God has been there. And that is the message that is relayed to us each and every week. Whatever it is that you have gone through, God is here. And when you are here, you will find rest. If you are experiencing loneliness, if you are experiencing insignificance, if you are experiencing fears of failure, God is here with you, and you will find rest. You will find acceptance. You will find love. You will find significance of worth and worth, because that is who we already are. We're just sharing that message as it has been shared with us. And so, as we have seen through a particular psalm this morning, we are reminded that God has created each and every one of us, and in that we are given our significance and our worth. The thing I hope we remember about the Psalms is that they are songs. They are lyrics. They are read with the intention of being sung. Not just being read inwardly in our minds, but also outwardly in our voice, in our song, in our hearts. They are lyrics for us to experience. And so I invite us just to hear this psalm, Psalm 139, once again. Maybe to listen as someone who feels lost. To listen as someone who may feel insignificant. To listen as someone who has experienced failure. And to be reminded that you are none of those. As we hear these words in prayer. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down. You are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in, behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take up the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there shall your hand lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. wonderful are your works. This I know very well. My frame is not hidden from you. When I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth, your eyes beheld my unformed substance. In your book were written all the days that were formed for me, when none of them had yet existed. How heavy, O God, to me are your thoughts. How vast is the sum of them. I try to count them. They are more than the sand. I come to the end. I come to the end, and I am still with you. This is what God tells us when we are searching for significance, when we are searching for meaning, when we are searching to try to belong, to be someone who fits in. We remember that God has already been there and has taken each step that we have taken because God is always with us. Paul Tillich, who is a famous theologian, wrote this about being accepted. He writes, "Grace strikes us when we are in great pain and restlessness. It strikes us when we walk through the valley of darkness and a meaningless and empty life. It strikes us when we feel that our separation is deeper than usual. It strikes us when year after year that longed-for perfection of life does not appear, when the old compulsions reign within us as they have for decades, when despair destroys all joy and courage. Sometimes at that moment, a wave of light breaks into our darkness, and it is as though a voice has been saying, 'You are accepted. You are accepted.' Do not ask for the name now. Perhaps you will find it later. Do not try to do anything now. Perhaps later you will do much. Do not seek anything. Do not perform anything. Do not intend anything. For now, simply accept. Simply accept that you are accepted. If that happens to us, we experience grace." There were a couple of teenagers one night talking about a form of Judaism that they really like, which is called Tikkun Olam. And one of the teens says that, you know, to me, Tikkun Olam means that the world is broken into many pieces, and it is our job to find them all and put them back together. And the other teen thinks about it for a second, and he says, "Well, maybe we're not supposed to find the pieces. Maybe we are the pieces." And so as we come now to this open table, we come together in our brokenness. We come together as many different pieces, and sometimes we feel as though we are jagged and we are rusty and we are meaningless, that we don't have worth, that what we have done with our lives has not amounted to anything, that we are failures. But no one here is a failure. We should not be afraid of who we are. And we should not be afraid that we are alone, because God is with us. If there are folks who can help us put chairs on either side of the wall, we have an event tonight. It would be a big help if we can get these chairs out of the way. We hope that you have experienced a time today in which you are reminded that you are not a failure. None of us are. None of us are insignificant. None of us are unworthy. This table has been open to each and every one of us. We hope that you have experienced that invitation to sit down right in the middle of the fire that is brought into the authenticity that exists in this time of worship. And so if we know of those who are in this community who are feeling insignificant, alone, unworthy, let them know that they are welcome here. And when they show up, we will put them right in the middle of the seat, right in front of that fireplace, and put down that blanket of warmth and love and acceptance, because this is what God does for each of us. Let us go forth now knowing that we are not alone. We have been fearfully and wonderfully made, and our Creator did not leave us after we are created. That image and that presence continues with us. May we go and be that presence to others, and may we go in peace. Amen.